just remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
Good morning, Vietnam, and good timely greeting to you, listener. Welcome back to the next installment in our super special Marvel series here at Play It Again, Kyla. I am very excited for today's episode. We will be discussing 2014's Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm super pumped for the guests that I have on today. I have returning guest Hagen, who any of you who are returning listeners are probably already aware of him and my rapport with him. And I also have a super special first-time guest, Ananya, who I am super excited about. I think you're all going to love her. Before we jump into our discussion with the two of them, I did want to mention why I felt like Guardians was a film that absolutely had to be discussed in our first wave Marvel series here. We're obviously beyond phase one. We're well into phase two at this point in our Marvel discussion. But this is my first set of Marvel episodes. I will be doing more Marvel episodes at a later date, but I'm starting to wrap up my Marvel series. This is actually the penultimate episode of the Marvel series, and the final episode of this first series will deal with Captain America: Civil War. But Guardians of the Galaxy absolutely had to be included for a number of reasons. One, it's oft-cited as a lot of people's favorite Marvel film for good reason, and it also just feels like a breath of fresh air into the MCU. I know for me personally, this film came out when I was beginning to suffer from some pretty serious Marvel fatigue. Just going to be really honest with you guys, other than Winter Soldier, Phase 2 just wasn't really doing it for me up until this point, and the remainder of Phase 2 didn't really do it for me all that well, but Guardians and Winter Soldier both were really strong entries into Phase 2 and managed to keep the phase afloat for me. And so I felt like this film also is so important to the overall lore of the MCU. Gamora, we'll talk about later in this episode when we break down the characters, I personally feel like is the glue of the MCU in a lot of ways. She brings in Nebula, she brings in Thanos, and I just feel like this episode had to be done because Guardians as an individual film is so important to the larger MCU. And also it's just so fun. It was very easy to find people who were willing to discuss this movie because this movie is so beloved by so many. So I hope that you're excited. I hope that you enjoy the Guardians of the Galaxy. If not, don't really know why you're here, but stick around. Maybe we can convince you to enjoy them. And so without further ado, let's go ahead and get started.
Who are you?
Star-Lord.
Who?
Well, Star-Lord, man. Legendary outlaw. Forget it.
We arrested these five on Xandar. Check out the rap sheets.
Drax, a.k.a. the Destroyer. Since his wife and family were killed, he's been on a rampage across the galaxy in a search for vengeance. Gamora, soldier, assassin, wanted on over a dozen counts of murder. Rocket, wanted on over 50 charges of vehicular theft and escape from lockup.
What the hell?
Groot, he's been traveling recently as Rocket's personal houseplant slash muscle.
Peter Jason Quill. He's also known as Star-Lord.
Who calls him that?
Himself, mostly. He's wanted largely on charges of minor assault, public intoxication, and fraud.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know how this machine worked.
Hey, that's mine.
You son of a...
Hey! Take those headphones off right now!
They call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy.
What a bunch of a-holes.
What kind of feeling?
So here today to help me discuss Guardians of the Galaxy are two very special guests, Ananya and Hagen. Introduce yourself, guys.
Hi, I'm Ananya. Follow me on Instagram at ananya.sampath. I post amazing content and
you want me to support it. Hi, guys. I'm Hagen. I've been on a few episodes before. I'm also going to be on the Captain America Civil War episode, in which I'll be representing Team Iron Man. So if you want to support that, and therefore me, please follow me on Instagram at HagenLR23. Thank you.
I love that you guys both just plugged your Instagrams. Incredible. You'll have to let me know if you actually get an uptick in followers from this. It'll be like three people, like my three loyal listeners.
Hey, three loyal listeners is enough for me.
It's true. It's true. As long as they're supporting you over your competition from the Civil
exactly.
War episode, right?
Yeah. It'd be very disappointing to hear anyone pick the other side, but I guess there's some confused people out there.
We'll see about that. So for my loyal listeners, you're well aware that Hagen is a returning guest to this podcast, but this is actually Ananya's first time here at Play It Again, Kyla. So I'm going to give her the opportunity to answer my standard Marvel getting to know you questions. So are you prepared, Ananya?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Love to hear it. So my first question for you is, who is your favorite Avenger?
So I have to say Iron Man. I know it's a pretty standard answer, but I just find him like the most entertaining and developed as a character. And I just think he's the coolest out of all of them.
I agree with you, and I think that the reason it seems like the cop-out answer, though, is just because it's, like, the correct answer. Like, yeah. That's why so many people say it.
Yeah.
So, my next question is, what's your favorite Marvel movie?
Okay, so I would have to say the first Avengers, just because I've watched it, I think, seven times, like, some insane amount of times, because I watched it at home, and then right after that, I was going to Australia for vacation, and they had these, like, standard TVs on the plane where they played movies, and you couldn't really decide what it was, and they played Avengers twice on the way there and twice on the way back, so I got to, like, really, really, really watch the movie, and then I ended up just loving it. I don't know why. I think it was just because it was the introductions to all the characters and them working together, so probably the first Avengers.
Yeah, that's a fair response. I love that when you started out with, I've seen it like seven times, like some insane amount of times. I was like, that's pretty good. But then when you said that you saw it all of those times, like in such a condensed amount of time, yeah. Like that's commitment to the Avengers right there. That's pretty impressive. And now I'm going to ask you, what do you consider to be the best Marvel movie?
Okay, so this is, again, sort of the cop-out answer, but I would have to say either Infinity War or Endgame, just because I think the plots are so gripping. And, like, it's not like the other movies, the plots aren't that good, but I just think, like, I think, like, the cinematography, the characters, the plot, everything that they encounter is so intriguing and so interesting. I remember finishing Infinity War and being like, I need the next one out right now. And I think, like, especially the shock value really added to how good the movie was. So probably I can't decide between the two of them, but either Endgame or Infinity War.
Yeah, I'm finding in this series that that's most people's answers are one of those films, which, again, I don't think makes it, like, a cop-out. I just think, like, that's genuinely the correct answer in a lot of people's minds. Mm-hmm. And I remember after Infinity War, like, seeing it in the theater, it just being, like, silent. Because, like you said, everyone was like, that can't be the end. Like, we need the next part right now. And that was just such a, like, singular theater-going experience. Like, I've never had anything else quite like that. And for that reason, I feel, like, pretty strong emotional attachment to Infinity War. Yeah. So now I'm going to ask you, what do you consider to be the best Marvel costume?
So I would probably have to go with Iron Man again, just because I feel like there are way more intricacies in his costume than any of the other ones, because it's so tech-oriented. So I would say that the design for his costume and the way that it all comes together in different pieces is really, really cool. And it's also just a really cool cinematic experience, like watch him like attract the costume onto him, whereas mm-hmm. everyone else is usually like in their gear, or like, I don't know, Captain America is usually wearing his tights. But Iron Man always has this like super developed tech costume, which I just think is really cool.
Yeah, just yeah. to add to that, I really like how the evolution of his costume, and like how you see, you know, in each subsequent film, like the way it comes on to him faster and faster and like smoother and stuff like that. It's cool to watch it evolve.
Yeah, I agree. And my final question for you, Ananya, here in our set of Marvel getting to know you questions, if you could have one hero's powers, whose would you choose and why?
Okay, so this is a tough one, and it's not really like a power, but I would want to have Black Widow's just abilities, because I just think she's so badass, and I want to be able to like be like punch them, be like karate kick them, and do all that cool stuff that she does. And I just think she's a really cool her powers are just a really cool like female representation and strength as well, because she's so like talented as a fighter, and she's so stealthy and moves so like fluidly and well, that the ability to do something cool like that is just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Hagen and I have talked extensively, especially in our Avengers episode, about Black Widow and how interesting it is that like her powers are so normal and therefore like feel accessible almost, and how like it's just so interesting that you have her in the midst of like all these people who their powers almost feel downright miraculous, and hers is just like super advanced combat, but that almost makes people like gravitate to her character more and like feel more of an attachment to her, you know, because on some level we feel like we could be Black Widow, you know. Also, who doesn't want to be Scarlett Johansson, right?
Yeah, that definitely helps her.
Yeah, like if Black Widow were played by anyone else, I don't know how I would feel. Like, I have such a strong emotional attachment to ScarJo in that role. All of ScarJo's issues notwithstanding, but you know.
No, she does a good job.
Yeah. So now we're going to shift gears and jump into talking about Guardians of the Galaxy specifically. And as I always do, I'm going to offer some behind-the-scenes fun facts that I find interesting about the making of this movie. And then we'll jump into each talking about our experiences watching this movie. So my first fun fact is that James Gunn initially did not want to test Chris Pratt for the role of Star-Lord. He didn't want Chris Pratt to audition because he just thought that Chris Pratt was so like immediately identifiable with the work he had done in the past, and he just didn't think he was going to be right for the role. And then when Chris Pratt finally came in to audition, it only took 30 seconds for Gunn to be ready to cast him on the spot, which is just hilarious to me. Also, James Gunn was so won over by Chris Pratt's audition that he told him he would cast him even if he didn't lose any weight. Like, he was like, you don't have to get into shape, I want you that badly. And Chris Pratt was like, no, man, give me 6 months and I'll lose 50 pounds. And he ended up losing 60. But James Gunn joked to Chris Pratt. He was like, I'm willing to CGI a six-pack on you. Like, it's fine. Which I just think is hilarious. Something Hagen and I have talked about in a lot of our previous episodes is how much the actors who play these roles just come to embody these characters, and how much the actor's personality bleeds over into the character. So it should come as a surprise to no one that a lot of Peter Quill's best lines in this movie were improvised by Chris Pratt. And actually Peter dropping the orb during the collector scene was improvised by Pratt. And interestingly, during the commentary on this movie, James Gunn said that it was completely an accident. Chris Pratt didn't mean to drop the orb, but then later apparently Chris Pratt clarified to James Gunn that he had intended to drop the orb the whole time. He just thought it would be better to seek forgiveness than ask permission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds like a Chris Pratt type of thing to do.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. According to Vin Diesel, his performance as Groot helped him get through one of the worst periods in his life, and he credits his performance as Groot with helping him deal with the loss of his friend Paul Walker. This was the first film that he that was in production that he was a part of after Paul Walker's death. Bradley Cooper has claimed that he was paid more for voicing Rocket Raccoon than he was paid for his roles in Silver Linings Playbook and The Hangover combined. Which is hilarious to me. This is something we're going to talk about later on, but it's so interesting to me that for roles like Groot and Rocket, like, they cast super famous actors. Because I'm just like, you didn't really have to do that, Marvel. Like, you could have cast anyone and paid them anything. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't have to be Bradley Cooper or Vin Diesel in either of those roles. I'm like, I'm glad it is, because they're part of the Marvel family now, but it's just so interesting that, like, all Groot says is, "I am Groot." Like, why did we need Vin Diesel in that role? But according to Vin Diesel, he recorded the line, "I am Groot," over 1,000 times during production for this movie. And he actually recorded Groot in several different languages, including Russian, Mandarin, Spanish, Portuguese, German, and French, so that his voice could be used in all the international versions of this film.
I guess that's, like, the one case in which an actor can do, like, their own voice for all the languages.
Right. Because, I mean, it's the same. You just have to learn each sentence once, you know, because it's the same every time.
Right. Like, wow, that's actually really cool.
It's neat. When Dave Bautista found out that he had won the role of Drax the Destroyer, he broke down in tears, overjoyed that he was getting to play a Marvel comic book role. Every day, his makeup, he spent over 5 hours in the makeup chair to get his makeup and prosthetic tattoo pieces applied. And in the comics, Drax is actually green, but in the movie, they changed his color to a more gray because, one, this film already had a green character, Gamora, and two, they wanted to distinguish Drax from the other big brutish green guy in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the Hulk. They didn't want anybody to get those two confused. If I had a black light, this place would look like a Jackson Pollock is one of the best ad-libs by Chris Pratt in this movie, according to James Gunn. And Chris Pratt has cited both Han Solo and Marty McFly as influences on his performance as Star-Lord, which we all know. Like, we see it.
That's a great.
That's like, who doesn't want to be those two, right?
The whole, like, showing up in the ship with, like, a different, like, girl thing, like, I feel like is a very Han Solo.
Yep. Also, like, the whole putting on as if you're a little bit cooler than maybe you actually are is classic Han Solo, you know, just for the bravado and the charm, which is like 50% just like you being like, if I act this cool, maybe I'll actually seem this cool, you know. Very Han Solo.
Star-Lord, man.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So now I want us each to talk about our experiences with this movie. So Ananya, I'll start with you. Can you remember the first time you saw this movie? And if you had to estimate, how many times do you think you've seen it since?
So the first time I saw it, I was with my family, I think. And it was actually because my parents wanted to see a different movie. And that movie was sold out. So we went to see Guardians. And I was into the Avengers at the time. I wasn't really brought in into, like, the rest of the Marvel universe. So I wasn't really sure about this movie. But I remember going in and just, like, laughing my head off. I thought it was so funny. And especially the scene where Chris Pratt's, or Star-Lord, sorry, gives the middle finger when he's arrested. I remember just, like, I was kind of young and I was with my parents. So I remember, like, feeling embarrassed to laugh. And then I saw them cracking up. So I started laughing too. And then after that, I went to go see it again in theaters with my friend and her family because they wanted to see it and they invited me. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll go.
And I remember the second time was just even better because now I had gotten that initial introduction to the characters and the plot and everything that I could really just appreciate how good the movie was. And I would say total, it's one of my go-to like plane movies whenever I'm on a long flight and it's in the movie section, I always watch it. So I would say probably like a good 5 or 6 times I've watched it. It's one of my favorite Marvel movies, so I've definitely watched it quite a bit.
Yeah. What about you, Hagen?
I also saw it with my family, like, the first time. And I also, like, wasn't, like, super into, like, Marvel at the time. Like, I mean, I was, like, I enjoyed all the Marvel movies I'd seen at this point. But, like, I think I was in 8th grade. And so it was, like, right around, you know, phase 2 was, like, just about, like, beginning. And, like, all the stuff was starting to kick up, you know. It hadn't. Like, it hadn't become, like, this huge cultural thing yet. And so, yeah, like, I went with my family. And I remember at the very beginning, I wasn't, like, I did not enjoy the first scene. Like, I don't know. It was, like, super awkward to, like, watch, like, the mom die, like, with my parents, like, right next to me. But then, like, once, like, the music started and it got lighthearted, like, then it was, like, super fun to just, like, follow along and, like, watch it and... Yeah, no, like, there's a ton of, like, great one-liners. Obviously, an amazing soundtrack. So, yeah. But, yeah, I've seen it maybe around 5 times as well. I've seen it a couple times since then. And then, you know, I watched it, like, a few days ago, like, before this. So, I've seen it a few times, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to me. I'm glad that I have both of you guys on the show because this is actually the first Marvel movie that I did not see in theaters. I, at this point in time, was suffering from major Marvel fatigue because I had seen, like, every other movie, like, the day it came out. And for some reason, I can remember, like, a lot of people telling me, like, as soon as this one came out, oh, this is, like, my favorite Marvel movie. This is the best one yet. And for some reason, like, that just wasn't enough for me, and I just didn't seek it out. But then I was working youth camp with some of my cousins, right after this had come out on DVD, and one of them was like, no, you have to see this. And so I sat down with a couple of my cousins, and we watched it for the first time, and I was like, why didn't I see this in theaters? Like, I wish I had had the theater-going experience, because I feel like this is the kind of movie that, because of the way all the jokes land and because of things like the soundtrack and everything, like, it would have been such a special communal experience, you know? And I still had that to a degree, but not at the level that I would have had in the theater seeing it with everyone else. In terms of how many times I've seen it, I think I've seen it about 4 or 5 times. I have to confess, I've definitely seen the second Guardians more times than I've seen the first. Which is interesting to me, but I saw the second in theaters, I guess, so that's why I have, like, more of an emotional connection to it, I would say.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's my experience with it. Now I'm gonna ask you each for your pit and your peak. So what's your least favorite part of watching this movie, and what's your favorite part? And Ananya, you can start.
Okay, so it's hard to pick a least favorite, so I'm going to start with my favorite. My favorite moment is actually a really small moment, but it's in the beginning when you're introduced to Star-Lord, and he just starts, like, dancing right when you think something, like, serious and terrible is going to happen, and he, like, fights off those creatures while he's just dancing. I just think that was such a great introduction to his character, and it was just really, like, lighthearted and fun, and I just remember it giving me a good feeling for the rest of the movie. I think it's an awesome introduction to have, because I think had they done it as a super serious, like, scary beginning scene, people would have just been, like, bored or would have been too much too soon. But just seeing, like, Chris Pratt dance like that and, like, fight off those creatures and all of that was just really funny. And then I would say my pit, it's not like a specific scene, but I think that they should have played up the Nebula Gamora dynamic a little bit more. I would have liked to gain more backstory into, like, their relationship and the relationship with their father And they go into that a lot more in the second movie, I know, and like in some of the Avengers movies as well. But I just think that with the introduction of both of those characters, doing a little bit more with the dynamic would have been good.
Yeah, I agree with that. What about you, Hagen?
Yeah, I'd say my pit is definitely like the mother's like death scene. It was just like, I don't know, watching that as like a kid, like with my family, like I just have like weird connections to it. It just was not like a pleasant experience. And like the whole way, it was just like all weirdly sad, and like the way she's like, take my hand, Peter, and like he doesn't do it, and it's just like, oof. So yeah. But as for like my peak, I mean, really, like the rest of the movie is just lighthearted the whole way through, and I like enjoy pretty much every scene. But because it's such like a good like comedy action movie, I'd say like the funniest part for me, so like the part I enjoy the most, is like at the end, when they're coming to like save the planet, right? And he sends the message to the one like officer, and you know, he's like, the quote is like, well, I may be an a-hole, but I'm not a total dick. And then the lady in charge, she's like, well, what do you think? And he's like, well, I don't think anyone's a total dick, ma'am. And so then like when they show up and they help, then Chris Pratt's like, yeah, they got my dick message.
Yeah, that's up there in terms of best lines, absolutely. My pit and peak, since you've already taken the mother's death scene, which I do agree is an interesting way to like set the tone for this movie, because it doesn't set the tone at all, you know, it's so like different from the rest of the movie. I'm gonna pick as my pit Groot's sacrifice, because that hit hard the first time I saw this movie. And then for my peak, I'm gonna have to kind of cheat a little bit maybe, but I'm gonna go with the music. The soundtrack as a whole is my peak of watching this movie.
Yeah, that's a fair answer.
Yeah, it's so good, and we're gonna talk about the soundtrack in some depth in just a little bit. But first I want to ask you guys, do you have a favorite shot from this movie, like a favorite image?
I think for me it's when they're escaping the prison and Rocket is driving them out. That scene of like the ship and them going out is really, really just like fun to watch, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I first watched it, my favorite shot was definitely like when they're all like, you know, standing there holding the Infinity Stone. But I'm not gonna lie, this time when I like rewatched it like a week ago, it was a little bit hard to take that seriously. Just like the way they're all holding it and like yelling, and then like as the next one like slowly reaches and then like grabs it and instantly like throws their arms back and starts yelling. It's just like, I don't know, like, I mean, yes, it's an Infinity Stone, but it's just a little bit too dramatic. It's hard to take seriously. It's kind of funny.
Why you gotta hate, Hagen?
No, I'm just saying, like, I have a different perspective on that scene now. So I guess I'd say, I really liked how all of the, like, the planet was Xandar, right? All their ships, how they, like, interlocked and created that force field. I liked the look of that.
Yeah, I agree with that. What about favorite lines? Do you guys have any favorite lines from this movie?
For me, it's a lot of Drax's lines, just so clueless. I can't remember who did it, but somebody, like, did the motion of
it was Star-Lord, yeah.
Star-Lord did the motion of cutting the throat, and he says something like, figure to the throat means death, metaphor. And he was just so funny, because he's like, he's just so clueless, but in the best way. There's another line where he takes the knife from one of the prisoners, and the prisoner is just like, that was my favorite knife. So honestly, like, any time Drax says something, because I think it's amazing that he's this big, burly, scary-looking guy, and he says the most clueless, innocent things, and I just think it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Hagen?
Yeah, I think, like, 90% of Drax's lines are, like, up there. And then so are a lot of Star-Lords. I really liked how, like, when the dude that, you know, saw Star-Lord in the very beginning, and he's like, no, like, Star-Lord, man, like, come on, you guys should know who I am. And then at the end, when they're, like, you know, boarding the ship, and the guy sees him, and he's like, Star-Lord. I just liked the way that, like, came together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also liked how the whole thing where, okay, Yondu picks up, like, Star-Lord and Gamora, and then he's, like, talking about how he didn't let his crew eat him. And then he's like, you've been holding that story over me for 20 years. Like, it's not that impressive, man. Like, normal people don't eat other people.
Uh-huh. No, those are really good. I have to mention, I love it when Star-Lord calls Groot the Giving Tree. He's like, what's wrong with Giving Tree here? That's a great one. Also, none of us have mentioned it yet, but I mean, come on. I am Groot. We are Groot. Very iconic lines in the Marvel Cinematic Canon. So now I want to ask you both, why do you think that this movie is cited by so many people as their favorite Marvel film?
The soundtrack. Like, I think that's like, that's the number one, like, point with this movie. You know, it's like, it's just this, like, these classic soundtracks, which makes it all lighthearted, and there's the dancing, and it's like, it's such a different vibe to every other Marvel movie. It's so much more about the comedy and the people than it is about the action and, like, this world is gonna get destroyed type of thing. Like, the foreshadowing in the beginning for, you know, Rowan and, like, him being a genocidal maniac is a lot, like, less significant than, you know, the foreshadowing of other villains in, like, every other Marvel film, because mm-hmm. they're much more focused on the characters and how they meet each other and, you know, just how they do their stuff. So, yeah.
I also think that, like, the writing in this movie is so good, like, the lines. And it's just, I think it's a movie that's, like Hayden was saying, way more centered on comedy. Which makes it more enjoyable and makes the plot more digestible. I think, like personally, I don't really like the Captain America movies that much, because I feel like he doesn't really have a personality. He's not that funny. Like,
he could do this uh-huh. all day.
Yeah. But the Guardians movies are so full of humor, and every character, like, is just so funny that even in the dark moments, you're still laughing. And I think that's what makes it people's favorites. It's just, mm-hmm. like, super fun to watch.
Yeah. No, I agree with that characterization. I like that you described it as digestible, though, because what's so interesting to me is that this movie does feel so digestible, but at the same time, this movie marks the introduction of so many new characters, so many new items, all of which are very significant to the overall, like, Marvel canon. So it's interesting to me that this movie never feels, like, overwhelming in any sort of way, because we are introduced to so many characters, to so many things in this film. So why is it that you think it is so digestible and that you're not overwhelmed as a viewer when watching this movie?
I think just because the dynamics between the characters are so light. Like, yeah, you have those dramatic moments, but for example, like, Rocket and Groot, their friendship is just so pure and so light that it's always keeping me smiling. And, like, Gamora and Star-Lord, it's not, like, some dramatic, drawn-out romance. It's, like, him striking out almost every time. It's just, I think that there are these moments where you're allowed to breathe. With some movies, like, for example, Endgame is not a movie I could watch multiple times in a row, or, like, watch really often, because it's so mm-hmm. heavy at points. But because this movie is like constantly like, okay, there's a plot point, but now here's a lot of comedy so that you can like breathe and understand what's going on, but also laugh and have a good time, that I think for the viewer, it gives you an experience that's fun. Like a lot of movies that are dark or action oriented or like have these major plot points feel really draining because you have to keep up with the plot and you know, like feel bad or sad at points when the characters are going through certain things. But I think this is done strategically and so well that you get to watch it and you don't feel completely exhausted. You feel energized and you're like having a good time with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, part of that comes down to the fact that the, you know, the soundtrack is not this like intense, heavy music or like light, upbeat music. It's just like literal songs that everyone knows. And mm-hmm. so, you know, when they're doing a scene breaking out of the prison and it's, you know, to a classic hit, then, you know, everyone's just, you know, instantly in a good mood. They're like maybe humming along, you know, like while they're chewing their popcorn. And then it's just like, you know, this scene is just like flying by and you're just, you know, happily like watching through it. It's not like there's this intense music and you are staring, you know, hunched over at the screen as like two people punch at each other, you know. It's a very different type of vibe. Even if the actions are the same, the impact that the music has is like very significant.
Yeah, no, I agree with both of you. Now I want us each to name who our favorite guardian is. So Ananya, you can go first.
Okay, so mine is Rocket. I think he's so funny, and I also think that he has this really like fun persona where he acts like this really hard, tough guy, but then you see all these really softer moments with Groot. And I just think he may not have as much depth and development as someone like Star-Lord, for example, but when you learn about his background and his history and you see where he is now, like, you empathize with him a lot, but on top of that, he keeps you laughing and he keeps you having a good time. And you also know that, like, despite all the cracks he makes at all of the Guardians, he loves them, he cares about them a lot. So, yeah, probably Rocket, I would have to say.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Hagen?
I think I'm going to go with Drax, just mm-hmm. because he's so funny. Like, mm-hmm. he's just so funny, because the way it's not just the way, like, the lines, it's the way he delivers them and, like, the utter confusion on his face and the way he just, like, totally diffuses the situation. Like, in the, you know, room, you know, in the prison, for example, he's like, why would I bring a finger to my throat? Why would, like, he's just like, but he keeps like this intense seriousness. Like, he doesn't ever say something while laughing. Like, he's just like, that is entirely idiotic, you know? And then I like his lines in Guardians 2 even more. But that's for another time.
I like both of your reasonings. I'm gonna have to go with Gamora, just because, one, Zoe Saldana is a queen. And two, I love the way that Gamora acts as like the bridge between so many different aspects of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that she, you know, has this like she is the link back to Thanos. She's the link to Nebula. She's the one who kind of is the glue that holds everything together for me in a lot of ways. And then also, I didn't realize what an emotional attachment to this character I had until I was watching Infinity War in the theater for the first time. And, like, you hear Rubber Band Man start playing, and you see, like, Gamora, like, head bobbing and singing along with it. And in that moment, I was just filled with such a rush of affection that I was like, wow, Gamora probably is, like, one of my top favorite characters in the MCU. And I just think that, you know, she's a total bad A. She's really cool. So that's my completely, like, rudimentary first grade reasoning for Gamora being my favorite. And now I want us to go through and talk about the actors who play each member of the Guardian Squad and what we make of their performances and their contributions to this movie. So let's start with Bradley Cooper as Rocket.
Okay.
it's an Oscar-worthy performance, right?
He does a really good job. I mean, just like the... Also, like, okay, not to, I mean, like, the first thing I'm about to say is just going to totally take away from his acting, because it's about some people that CGI Rocket, but, like, the way they make it so that he seems to have expressions, you know, goes very well with the voice acting, because it, like, feels, I mean, they, you know, anthropocize him, like, they turn him into basically just a human that looks like a raccoon instead of vice versa or whatever, but yeah, no, he does a really good job with, like, all the sarcastic comments and, you know, I don't know, being Rocket.
Yeah, I think Bradley Cooper has, in comedies especially, like, I noticed this in The Hangover too, is he has this quick wit that makes it really fun to watch his characters. And I think that quick wit translated into Rocket, and that's why Rocket is so enjoyable for us. Like, I can't even think of somebody who would do as good of a job of being like a snarky raccoon as Bradley Cooper now, and it's just unimaginable to think somebody else would play that role. And I don't know, I would just say that the way he does comedy acting is so fitted for a role like Rocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you, and I feel like Bradley Cooper as an actor is not like as appreciated for his wit or his like comedic timing as maybe other attributes that he has as an actor, but I absolutely agree that if you watch him specifically in comedies, like, it's pretty impressive how good his comedic timing is. So what about Vin Diesel as Groot? Why is Vin Diesel Groot? Let's discuss.
I have no good answer for you.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
I just think part of it was, like, it's a play on his, like, meathead persona of, like, does he have substance? So the character he plays is, like, says so many things, but at the same time is just saying, I'm Groot. So I just think that's a really funny thing that Vin Diesel does well. It's, like, he spins that. He, like, plays that stereotype of, with, like, his acting, and then the character itself, he tries to add depth, but at the same time Groot is just saying I am Groot.
Well, one time he said we are Groot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a riveting moment. I say that with sarcasm, but it was a riveting moment.
It packs an emotional wallop. You're like, wait, he can say other things, question mark.
But I think it just had more to do with the visuals of Groot than it did with the one who said it. But, you know, like, I don't know. I feel like I'm sure other voices could have done Groot, but I think that his did a good job with it. Also, again, it's really cool that he did it with the other languages, which means, like, you know, it'll have relatively the same inflection and emotional conviction and all that.
I just would love to have been a fly on the wall at the, like, MCU headquarters when this was being discussed, and Kevin Feige was like, no, I got it. Vin Diesel as Groot. And, like, everyone applauded. Like, it was, like, the greatest idea anyone in cinema had ever had. Because you know that's how it went down. Right? So let's go ahead and discuss Dave Bautista as Drax, another person with impeccable comedic timing, in my opinion.
No, it's, like, literally perfect. Just, like, the straight face, just, like, pause before he speaks, and the blank look he has on his face when it's just, yeah, no, it's great. I have very little comments to share aside from that, because it's, like, yeah, that's, like, that covers pretty much all of it, at least when it comes to Guardians.
Yeah, I mean, he, like Hagen said, other than, I don't really have much to add other than, like, his comedic timing is just amazing, and I think he's such a good fit for the role because he has this, like, big build, and is this, like, wrestler, former wrestler, and, like, gigantic dude, but the things that he's saying are so, like, innocent and could be coming out of the mouth of a 4-year-old. And I think it's just so funny.
That's what, like, I wonder sometimes how differently Drax could have been played if, like, anyone else were in that role. Because I think that a lot of what makes him work comes down to the fact that Dave Bautista doesn't try to, like, oversell anything. You know, like you said, Hagen, like, he has, like, that deadpan, straight face quality. And I just wonder how much of that comes from the fact that he primarily was a wrestler and a mixed martial artist and, like, wasn't necessarily an actor by trade. Like, Guardians was one of his, like, first major breakout roles. And so I just wonder, you know, if any other actor would have kind of oversold the comedic elements of Drax, but Dave Bautista just commits at just the right level where, like, he doesn't overplay anything. It's just, like, the perfect level of comedy for that role, you know?
Right. Like, he does it in an extremely believable way. Like, how, like, he just really sells the idea of this character only understanding literal speech.
Yeah, so what about Zoe Saldana as Gamora?
Queen. That's just like all I have to say. She did such a good job. She's an amazing actress. And, like, I think she just captures Gamora's strength really, really well. Like, all the things that Gamora endures and her whole, like, dynamic, her family dynamic and everything, like, Zoe Saldana executes it so perfectly. And I just think I don't know how to explain it other than she was just perfect for the role. Like, she was so good as Gamora.
Yeah, and also, like, she did something that I feel like a lot of, like, actresses, specifically in the MCU, didn't do, where, like, you know, like, for example, with Black Widow's, like, entrance in Iron Man 2, like, until she, like, did something, like, taking down guys, like, I feel like people weren't quite sure how badass she would be, you know, until that scene happened. But, like, for her, like, she just had to speak, like, calling out Nebula, and everyone's like, yeah, she's a badass, like, instantaneously. So, yeah, and then she was throughout the rest of the film, so.
Yeah, I think that Zoe Saldana really brought, like, a gravitas to the role, you know what I mean? Like, you just felt like she carried, like, the weight of the world within her. Like, when she moved, when she spoke, you were like, oh, I believe that this is a woman who has been through all of these things and who can withstand anything at this point, you know? Like, she fully embodied just the, like, weightiness of Gamora in, like, a really powerful way. And also, her chemistry with Chris Pratt is, like, just right, I think. And that's what, like, so many people point at Chris Pratt and are like, oh, you know, he was perfectly cast. But I really think all of the Guardians were perfectly cast. But let's go ahead and talk about Chris Pratt as Star-Lord. I mean, he was perfectly cast, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, for such a comedically based character, it's, like, a really nice comparison to these other, you know, mortal type superheroes like Iron Man and I guess not in the MCU, but, like, you know, just the type of character like a Batman or whatever, where it's this just rich dude with a bunch of stuff, which, like, not to take away from either of those characters, but it's just the way that, like, he completely contrasts it and is, like, just like a little comedian, you know, trying to be Han Solo pretty much. It's great. And then, like, the other thing about Chris Pratt, I was watching this video the other day and he was just talking about how, like, he enjoys doing comedy and, like, making his roles funnier because he enjoys making his cast members laugh, like, even more than, you know, just seeing audiences laugh in the future. And he was talking about how, when he was doing, like, Parks and Rec, he, like, went to the directors and was like, guys, what do you think if I, like, gained another 30 pounds? And, like, was just, like, heavier and funnier. And they were like, go for it. And so there's this one scene where apparently they were in this restaurant and it was, like, Jurassic Fork or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it was called. And the food there was, like, actual food, and every time they did a take, he would eat, like, a full rack of ribs. because like when he was doing it, he made the other like actors on set like crack up the whole time. And so he said he ate like 6 racks of ribs in like that one day. And then for lunch later, they were serving the leftover ribs from like the same catering company, and then he ate more. But it's just like the way he'll like do that sort of stuff for the sake of like making his cast members laugh is like, it's just a really good like comedic trait for the character. I feel like he's not just doing it. Like it's just such a natural inclination type of thing, you know?
Yeah. I think like having an actor who has a background in comedy was really good for the role, because I think like, if you not to crap on Captain America again, but like I personally just don't like him because I think he's so serious and so dry and boring to watch. But Chris Pratt like really brought that humor, and it was a really like it was a similar humor to like what I feel he brings to a lot of his roles. I wouldn't necessarily say he was like the same as his Parks and Rec humor, but definitely elements of that were brought in. And I think he just made it really entertaining to watch. I think with another actor, somebody who was more inclined towards dramatic acting, it would have been more of a boring movie, wouldn't have been as enjoyable and fun. But because that's the type of actor he is, it was made to be really funny and just enjoyable all around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So now that we've discussed the Guardians, I want us to talk a little bit about the villains in this movie, because up until this point in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, many critics had called out the fact that Marvel had a bit of what they called a villain problem, meaning that the heroes in the story were very well defined and very well executed, and the villain just kind of felt like a last minute addition that Marvel didn't spend that much time developing. This film introduces many villains of varying degrees of villainy, and those villains, you know, have larger contributions to the MCU as a whole later on in a lot of ways, but also those villains never within this film threaten to like overshadow the story or the characters that we're dealing with as the heroes. So do the varying villains in this movie ever feel overwhelming? Are they menacing enough? And do you think that this film offers better characterizations of villains than earlier Marvel films? I just threw a lot at you, but take it however you will.
I think, so this isn't necessarily like talking about the villain in this particular movie, but I think because Guardians kind of leads you into the introduction of Thanos, it's a really good film for that, because like you were saying, Gamora ties a lot together. And in terms of villains, I know Thanos, again, is not like the main villain in this movie, but and he's only referenced a few times, but I think like the introduction of a villain like Thanos and using like smaller level villains as pawns to build up to this big force that they're gonna have to fight was a really good idea, because it really drew me in. And I think a lot of times where movies go wrong with villains is like you have that, especially in a franchise, right? Like when you have one villain and then it's a new villain every movie, it gets really boring and repetitive, because there's nothing new to learn. There's no big force you're wondering what's going to happen with. But when they build off of this greater idea of Thanos as this like overarching looming figure, and Infinity War comes along, it's just so exciting, because then you know everything is coming together and that buildup is finally coming to a payoff.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things they did a good job with is showing how the rest of like the world is aware of like Ronan and Thanos, just as much, if not more so, than the Guardians are. And like, you know, at the beginning when Star-Lord like steals the orb and is trying to sell it to the dude, and he's like, someone said something about Ronan, and the guy like freaks out and like kicks him out and says like, I don't want any part of this. And it, you know, kind of is like, oh, this guy must be like the real deal. And then I really liked the scene where Ronan like, you know, betrays Thanos. And then Thanos just like basically treats him like a bug. I just like that whole dynamic, and it's like, okay, like, because Ronan is like relatively intimidating, and then you're like, oh, he's not that bad in comparison.
Yeah, I really like what you said, Ananya, about how like the foundation that is laid in this movie is like built upon going forward in the MCU and is what like keeps like draws viewers in and makes Infinity War feel so impactful, because I really agree. And I think the idea of Thanos as a villain using like other villains who should be menacing enough on their own, like as pawns, adds to his like ominous quality and is the reason that we are able to so fully buy into him as like the big bad of the entire MCU, you know? Mm-hmm. Not to harp too harshly on the theme of crapping on Captain America, but one thing I talked about in my Captain America, the First Avenger episode, is how that movie kind of fully leans into some of its like cartoony aspects in terms of how it's presenting that comic. We've talked about this conversation about how Guardians kind of fully leans into its comedic aspects. Another thing that it fully leans into is the sci-fi genre. And so I wanted to ask you guys, like, do you think that it fully leaning into the sci-fi genre works well? And does that add anything to the movie-going experience when watching this movie?
I think it works well for the movie and the rest of the Guardians franchise, but I think it kind of hurts the MCU a little bit in the long run, because it's like basically just saying, yeah, there's all these other planets and aliens and all this other stuff, and like we already know how to do like this, this, and that, and then yet they still struggle to come up with certain other scientific things, you know what I mean, like in the future for the MCU. Mm-hmm. So I just think it creates a few like weird like plot holes. But aside from that, I'm just a huge fan of like the sci-fi stuff, and I think they did a really good job putting their own spin on it, you know, and connecting it as best they could, at least, you know, in the beginning. So I'm a fan. I'm glad they went into that. I think it builds with the comedy, you know, allowing for these different characters to be of different like species and stuff, and therefore you can have a character like Drax, who again does not understand speech if it's not literal, you know, and like you can have Groot and have it make sense that he can only speak three words, and stuff like that. So I'm a fan.
Yeah, I think like the beauty of Guardians is that while most of the other films are set in our world, and that does create this nice effect of like you can see yourself in it, the beauty of Guardians is you get introduced to all these different worlds and different planets and these incredible species that it's, I think it makes it more fun. I think it's like the same appeal that attracts us to things like Star Wars or Harry Potter, like all of these movies that are set in different worlds, is like it offers a really cool escape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And since we're talking about like the sci-fi genre, we've talked about how comedic this film is. One thing that interests me about Guardians specifically, in terms of how it is set apart from the rest of the MCU, is how genre-defying it is. Some people, you know, have classified it as just straight sci-fi. Some people classify it as a heist film even. Some people classify it, you know, as a straight superhero movie. So I wanted to ask each of you, if you had to classify this film within a genre, what would you pick and why?
So we get one genre?
You can create your own hybrid genre if you must.
Okay. Well, now I feel like that's cheating.
I would say comedy more than the other ones. Just because, like, yeah, you got plot and that kind of a thing, but for me, at least, when I watched Guardians, that's not really what I remember or took away from it. I just, like, laughed a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most significant and defining part of Guardians, is that you get to have these characters that make you laugh constantly. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm actually going to agree. But I think the thing is this depends on how you perceive these genres now, because prior to the MCU, I don't think people would put comedy and superhero movie in the same breath.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of something that they've been doing with a lot of their movies, is it's just like building in that comedic value. And mm-hmm. now, I mean, even to the degree where certain movies rely more on their comedic value than anything else, right? And so on the one hand, that's just a classic Marvel superhero movie. And on the other, it's a comedy. So for this one, because of how prominent the comedy is, I'm going to say comedy, but I think that by the time the MCU is like, well, I guess I won't say done because they're probably never going to be done, but like, you know, very soon the concept of a superhero movie, and I think it already has changed, but like, it's going to be very significantly defined by having more comedic aspects than, you know, if you asked a bunch of people 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think that Marvel as a whole has like completely changed the way we approach the genre of the superhero film. But I think what's interesting is, to me, Guardians, more than any other Marvel film that I can think of right now, has changed within Marvel how we approach the genre of a superhero film, you know?
Yeah, because like sci-fi and a comedy and like with a bunch of main characters all at once. Yeah.
Right. So let's go ahead and talk about the soundtrack. We've been dancing around it this whole time. I want to start by asking each of you, do you have a favorite song from the soundtrack of Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think for me, it would have to be Come and Get Your Love. That's the name of the song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. I think that's probably my favorite. Just because it's just a really fun song and it makes me like smile, and it was just nice to have that like upbeat fun song that everyone knows play in the middle of the movie.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Hagen?
I'd say either Ain't No Mountain High Enough. I thought it was just really well timed when they did it, and it's just like, it's such a good song. And then, or Oh Child, just because of like how he used the song in the movie, but not mm-hmm. because it's like one of my favorite. Like, I like a lot of other songs in the soundtrack more, but I just like the way it was used. But yeah, Ain't No Mountain High Enough is probably my favorite when it comes to just the music, but like, it's tough. There's a lot of good ones.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is truly a question that there's no wrong answer to, because every song that's used is iconic, and the way that they're all used is also iconic. I'm gonna go Moon Age Daydream, because that's just my favorite song on the soundtrack in general. And then I also like the fact that's the only song on the soundtrack that was added in post-production. Every other song they had on set with them and would like play to get like in the mood for the scene, but then that one was added by James Gunn later on, which I just find very interesting. But it still works really well and fits with the rest of the soundtrack perfectly, I think. James Gunn has talked extensively about the use of music in this film, about how he wanted the music to give the movie like a grounded quality, and so you still feel connected to Earth, and you still feel a sense of Peter Quill's humanity, and that this is the tether that keeps him tied to Earth and to his mother and to all that he knew as a child. So do you think that the music helped keep the film grounded as James Gunn intended?
I definitely feel like it did. I think especially like watching it in the theaters, you could see that like everyone would instantly recognize a song playing, and like everyone would have a smile on their face. And I think especially when you're going to do a movie that is set in all these other realms, it's nice to have that human tether, like you were saying, and especially that aspect of relatability for the audience to feel more immersed in the movie. It's like, hey, I know that song, and I'm watching this stuff happen on the screen. So I think it just really tied the movie together.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, it definitely worked. It really, I think if anything, it ties you to also Star-Lord as being like the main character sort of thing, because it's, you know, it's his music, and then it brings you to like this idea that in a world with all these like different superpowered people, there's still those that are just like quote unquote normal, you know, and there's the music and the connection to Earth and the way they kind of talk about Earth. I like how they have a different name. They call it, you know, Terra, like, you know, for like the Latin of Earth, which is just like, it's cool that they're like, you know, treating it like just some other like random planet full of imbeciles. and, you know, I like that. I like how the music is kind of just a nice connection. Yeah, I think it really works for the audience to just feel engaged, even when everything else is just a little wacky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I did want to note that this is the first soundtrack album ever to go to the top of the Billboard 200 chart that was comprised entirely of previously released songs, which is just very interesting to me. Like, every other soundtrack that had ever gone to the top had songs that were composed and recorded specifically for that movie. And this is the first one that's just like a hodgepodge of previously recorded songs that were picked for the film. And it's no surprise to me that it went straight to the top.
Did it get to like number one?
I think so. I'm pretty sure it was number one.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So now I want us to talk about how big of a risk we think this film was for Marvel in 2014. Because like we previously stated, this movie doesn't follow the Marvel formula at all. And at the point where this movie comes out within Marvel, the formula is well established. Like, we know the beats that a standard Marvel movie is going to hit, but the formula isn't really doing as well as it did earlier in the MCU, because we have some sequels that just, let's be honest, aren't great. Hagen, you don't have to drop any names.
You're not talking about Thor the Dark World, are you?
Absolutely not. That movie rocks. but if I were talking about it, maybe I could say it's not as good of an installment as the origin film in that series of films. So at this
Can
point
you
in time, I've
that?
What no, is- no, I'm cutting it out of the episode. It will not be in here when it airs. but anyway, so like at this point in time, Marvel is kind of going through like a little bit of an identity crisis. So how big of a risk do you think this film was for Marvel in 2014? And how did Marvel manage to execute this film that stands out so clearly from all their other films so well?
I mean, I think that it was not actually, I personally don't actually think it was that much of a risk, because like, yes, like it was advertised like Guardians of the Galaxy, but like it was such, I mean, yes, it was very different. So I guess that's where the risk is. But I think if anything, they just appealed to a huge new dynamic of people, you know, because like at first, you know, the first people to go to the Marvel movies are just the people who are, you know, previously into like comic books or superheroes or sci-fi type of stuff. And then, you know, as it became more and more mainstream, more people will just, you know, go to them. And then this one, if anything, was an opportunity to just bring in a more unique set of viewers. So I don't think it was too risky. I think it was just more unsure of, will it actually do really well, or will it just do about average, you know? Like, I don't think they should have been too worried about it covering it itself, you know, but exceeding expectations is, I think, where the surprise would have come from, in my mind at least.
Yeah, I think like the risk was more introducing like a whole new slew of characters that in the first movie, at least, had virtually no relationship to the other ones. Like, I think with Iron Man, Captain America, Thor's in a different place, but like the Avengers kind of tied them all together. And you also knew that a lot of them were in the same world. But Guardians, it's like this whole new world and this whole new set of people to
get attached to, but I think Marvel did a really good job of making these characters people that you could love for really easily. And then later on, when they were able to tie it into the rest of the characters we loved in Avengers, it just made it more, it was just like a better movie because of it, because of Guardians and the introduction of those characters.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that the character aspect is what sets this movie apart so strongly to me, because like you were saying, like every other MCU film, you know, primarily we're introduced to the one hero character that we're supposed to root for and feel the most attached to. And then we have two or three like secondary characters that don't have as big of an impact on the overall like Marvel narrative, but like we still want to invest in them somewhat. And then most characters have like this like little supporting coterie that like we don't actually care about beyond like their individual movies. You know what I mean? Like there's one character we're supposed to love in like the MCU movies, and there's a couple characters that we're like, yeah, they're okay, we like them, and then everyone else is just pretty much entirely forgettable. The risk, but what also gets Guardians the biggest reward, I think, is that in Guardians, like, no one is expendable. Like, you invest in almost every character you're introduced to. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and I think that pays off, like, exceptionally well for the Guardians movie, because everyone has an entry point to this universe, because everyone can connect with some character that we come to find within the Guardians universe, you know? So now I want to ask you each, does this film only work so well because it turns the expectations of a Marvel movie on its head? So like, say if this movie came out in phase one before the formula of Marvel was so well established, do you think it would have worked as well? Or do you think it works as well as it does because it subverts the expectations we had come to have from a Marvel movie?
I think that if it was a similar type of movie earlier on and it was like set on Earth, I don't think it would have done as well. But I think because it was, you know, what it was, and it was set apart from all these other characters, and there was no real connection to the rest of the MCU except by maybe one or two name drops, I think because of that, it would have done really well, even if it was done earlier, you know? And, you know, they just take out a couple name drops, put in something else instead, but it's still in space. It's still these characters. Because it's one of the best standalone Marvel movies, I feel like. You know, like, it's one of the few in the MCU that you can, like, take out of the set, sit down, watch it as a beginning, middle, and end, and you don't need a sequel to happen. Like, it could just be a standalone movie, and because of that, I think putting it earlier wouldn't have made it any worse.
Yeah, I would say also, I think it's just a good film. I think even if it was standalone or in phase one, people would have liked it. And the reason I say that is I think there were no previous attachments, right? You have all these completely new characters, essentially, and there is nothing, like, I had so many friends that this was their first Marvel movie that they had seen, and they loved it because it's just a good movie, and you don't have those, it's not, like, forced to stick to those Marvel guidelines, which means that, like, even aside from Marvel, it makes it still a good movie, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how is the rewatch experience in 2020 different than it would have been previously? Like, how is watching this movie now colored by where we know the MCU is headed in later installments?
For me, I thought my interest in Thanos was a lot greater. Before, I was just like, oh, this is just some other, like, dude that's, like, there. You know, I didn't care too much. But now I'm like, oh yeah, maybe pissing him off is not a good idea, Ronan. But you know, he did so anyways. And then also, I just think it's a little harder to take parts of the movie as seriously, you know, because of how comedic it is and because you know where everything ends up. But because of that, it's just as fun to watch, because if anything, it got even more lighthearted for me, mm-hmm. you know, knowing that the stakes are so much lower than what they can be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would say kind of the same as Hagen is, like, I like to go back and watch it and look for Easter eggs with Thanos just because I know what's coming. And I just think in general, it makes it really exciting for people, because while Guardians is not one of the original involvements with, like, the Avengers and all that stuff, it's like you get to go back and be like, ooh, here are all these clues. And then you see them reappear in, like, Infinity War and Endgame. And it's just a really cool thing to see those two worlds merge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. So before we close out, I'm going to pose a question to you two that I pose at the end of every episode, which is this a movie worth rewatching? And how would you convince someone of that fact?
Okay, I guess I'll go first. So I think that, like many Marvel movies, I think this is worth rewatching. Again, this is
Many Marvel movies. Which ones are not worth rewatching, Hagen?
I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. I won't name drop too many. But I think, you know, my answer is going to be similar to the answers I've given on other films, which is, if you're, like, a big Marvel fan, rewatching is a lot easier because you can go back and look for certain things, and that in itself can be really fun to see where the foreshadowing is. But even so, I think it's a really good rewatching film because of how funny it is. Like I said, it's one of the best standalone Marvel films, in my opinion. And, like, honestly, the number one thing, like, this is the perfect excuse to just listen to an amazing soundtrack. So if that can't convince you, then you're probably not going to be convinced to rewatch many movies.
Yeah.
Sorry. You go ahead, Ananya.
For me, I would say, like, definitely a rewatch. And I think that the way I would convince somebody is, like, Hagen was saying, it's just a really funny movie. Like, you may not like action or sci-fi or any of that, but you don't have to like this movie because it's so funny. And I think that's the biggest, draw of Guardians, and the biggest way I would convince somebody is just that you're going to fall in love with the characters, and you're going to fall in love with the one-liners and all of that, that you don't need to like any of the typical Marvel movie stuff. You can just watch it and have a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that you guys have both hit the nail on the head and put it super eloquently. I don't really think that there's much for me to add. Is there anything that we haven't discussed throughout this conversation that you think bears mentioning about this movie before we close it out?
I just think the very end scene where, like, Yondu and his crew talk about how, like, imagine if we actually dropped him off with his father. Type of mm-hmm. thing is just such a great segue, and like, to, you know, where the next film goes, and just keeping you a little bit interested and like, oh, huh, that makes sense. I did kind of wonder why a random 12-year-old was picked up by aliens, you know, because you'd like, mm-hmm. at least for me, I'd completely forgotten about that by the time it showed up. And then I was like, oh, huh, that makes a little, like, it answers a question while posing a new one. And I think it's just a great little line that, you know, wraps it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Also, one thing I want to mention is the post-credit scene in this film, featuring none other than Seth Green playing the role of the Duck, which ties this film brilliantly back to Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed, which was also written by James Gunn. So it adds to my theory that all of James Gunn's films, including the Scooby-Doo films, are linked to the MCU.
I'm going to need to hear more about this in the future.
Okay. I'm going to make, like, a PowerPoint. Don't worry. Everyone will have access. So anything else we want to say before we officially close out?
No, I think we covered all that we wanted to.
All right. Well, Ananya, thank you so much for being my guest here today. Hagen doesn't even qualify as a guest anymore, I don't think. He's just a friend of the podcast. I joke that he's like my number one investor. but I so enjoyed having you on, and you are welcome back absolutely anytime for any episode of your choosing. So don't hesitate to reach out.
Talk about movies I like. For
that's the whole point of the podcast. Is during quarantine, I was like, I just need an outlet to just talk about things that I love. So yeah, this has been Play It Again, Kyla. As always, if you as a listener have suggestions of a film you would like to hear discussed, don't hesitate to reach out. You can find the podcast with the handle Play It Again, Kyla on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can find me personally at @Kyla_Z_Percival on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd. Once again, this has been Play It Again, Kyla. I am your host, Kyla Percival, signing off and saying I voted for Andy Kaufman.
You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.